Hello everyone, I'm Stephen Jolly. Welcome to this Talking Vision special, which will feature the proceedings of the Vision Australia 2010 Annual General Meeting. It was Brisbane's turn this year, so the venue was the new Vision Australia Cooperoo Centre in Old Cleveland Road. Our presentation over the next 2 hours will include the proceedings of the AGM, an address from the guest speaker, Lawrence Springborg, the Deputy Leader of the Opposition, and then finally, presentations of the various Vision Australia awards, well worth listening out for. Perhaps the high point of the AGM will be the report from Vision Australia CEO Gerard Menses. That's coming up in around 25 minutes. By 10 a.m. on a warm, sunny morning on Friday, November the 26th, around 80 people had gathered in a pleasant outdoor setting at Vision Australia's new Queensland headquarters to witness the proceedings. Initially, we were greeted by Karen Knight, who's the Regional Manager, Independent Living Services, in that part of Australia. And Karen also acknowledged the Indigenous people on whose land we had gathered. We can't bring you her comments because, actually, there was a little bit of a problem with the microphones. But then Dr. Kevin Murfitt, Chair of Vision Australia, made some welcoming remarks. You'll be interested to know that Kevin is a person who is blind, as too is Karen, who I was just mentioning. Dr. Kevin Murfitt.
Good morning, all. It's a pleasure to welcome you to Vision Australia's Annual General Meeting for 2010. We're honoured to share our vision that people who are with blindness and low vision will be able to access and fully participate in every part of life they choose. We'll go to a roll call very soon, but first, I'd just like to welcome all our members, clients, staff, volunteers, supporters and directors. A special welcome to our client representatives, including the Client Representative Council Chair, Stephen Belvin, who will give an address later. The Honourable Cameron Dick, MP, Attorney General and Minister for Industrial Relations and Member for Greenslopes, the local member, was with us earlier today and unfortunately has had to leave, but it's great that he came along early to say hello. Julie Atwood, MP, who was Parliamentary Secretary for the Minister for Disability Services and Multicultural Affairs, and the member for Mount Ommaney is with us as too. Welcome, Julie. And our guest speaker, Mr. Lawrence Springborg, MP, Deputy Leader of the Opposition, who will be joining us a little later. Now, today's event, as you've probably gathered, is being held in a large marquee located to the right of the main building looking from Old Cleveland Road in what is usually the staff car park. It seats about 100 people in theatre style. At the front of the marquee, we have a raised stage. To my left and right, there are long tables, each seating representatives of Vision Australia's board and senior management. My fellow directors and senior management on the dais will now introduce themselves, starting from the outside end of the table on my left.
Good morning, my name is Nick Carter. I'm based in Brisbane and I run my own commercial property management company, and I chair the board's property committee.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Keith Barton. I'm a Sydney-based director, and I've been on the board since the formation of Vision Australia. I'm also chairman of the HR committee and on the property committee.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Jan Lovey-Kitchen. I'm based here in Brisbane. I'm an adjunct professor at the School of Optometry at Queensland University of Technology, and I chair their Research Ethics Committee. I've been on the board since June 2007, and I'm a member of the Client Services Committee.
Good morning. My name's Owen Vanderwall. I'm a retired banker from Sydney. I joined the board in 2004. I'm a deputy chair and I also chair the Client Services Committee.
Good morning. My name is Ron McCallum. I'm Sydney-based. I'm Professor of Law at the University of Sydney. I also chair the United Nations Committee on the Rights of Persons with Disabilities. I'm one of the two deputy chairs of the board, and it's been my honour and privilege to have been on the board since February 2006.
Hello, I'm Gerard Menses, and I'm privileged to be the Chief Executive Officer of Vision Australia.
And I'm here in the middle, Kevin Murphy, Chair of Vision Australia, on my right.
And good morning, my name is David Speyer. I'm the General Manager of Corporate Services and the Company Secretary.
Good morning, I'm Teresa Smith-Ruig. I'm based in Armidale, New South Wales. I'm a lecturer in business and management at the university there. I also serve on the board's Human Resources Committee, and I've been on the board since 2007.
Good morning, I'm Paul Gleeson. I'm based in Melbourne. I'm a lawyer. I've been on the board since 2004. I'm the chair of the Audit, Finance and Business Risk Committee, and I also serve on the Property Committee.
That's it.
Good morning, my name is Tony Hanmer. I'm based on the Sunshine Coast here in Queensland. I sit on the Audit Committee with Paul and I've been a director since 2007.
Hello, my name is Lynn Allison. I was a Senator for Victoria until 2009, and since that time I've been on Vision Australia's board and a number of others, and I serve on the Client Services Committee.
I'm Donald Fraser. I've been a board member here since 2008, and prior to that I was with Seeing Eye Dogs. I'm a professional director and an IT business owner, and I'm based in Melbourne.
And that's all on the dais. I also have an apology from fellow director Ross McColl, who is from Melbourne, and he's a recently retired partner in PricewaterhouseCoopers. Now, as is tradition at Vision Australia events, we'll do a roll call, and that's especially to assist people who cannot see to know who's around next to them or a little bit further away so that they can either network or avoid later on. But I'll please welcome Ashley up to read the attendance list as a roll call. Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Ashley Wood. Thank you, Kevin, and I am the Communications Manager at Vision Australia. As Kevin said, I will now commence a roll call of the people present today. Julie Atwood, MP, Parliamentary Secretary for Disability Services and Multicultural Services and Member for Mount Ommaney. Stephen Belbin, Chair, Client Representative Council. Bill Jolly, Member of the Client Representative Council. Trevor Rice, Member of the Client Representative Council. Cheryl Pascal, President, Blind Citizens Australia. Glenda Alexander, General Manager, Independent Living Services. Michael Hansen, General Manager, Organisational Development. Lee Garwood, General Manager, Seeing Eye Dogs Orientation and Mobility. Mark Hastie, Craig Hardy, Peter Black, Maureen Davenport, John Davenport, Robin Bree, Ken Back, Pat McLee, Matt Daveran, Michael Coker, Nathan Saunders, Barbara Murarenko, Liz Jeffrey, JC Schaff, Deidre Drysdale, Lee Jones, Tom Wharton, Bill Smith, Diane Monopoly, Angelito Manalong, Chantel Smith, Kim Pillick, Melissa Grintel, Cheryl Thompson, Gerard Mugovan, Matt Kelleher, Barb Smith, Andrew Shepherd, Marjorie West, Amanda Bacon, John Simpson, Christine Simpson, Sandra Vincent, Neil McGill, Margaret McGill, Val Milliken, Margaret Scott, Peter Evans, Amy Cobb, Jared Gossens, Fiona Douglas, Kathy Heenan, Megan Denyer, Karen Dowd, Andrew DeMarco, Amanda Boland-Curran, Michelle Fischetto, Paula Alfonso, Maurice Wybrow, Debbie Stevens, David Pullen, Margaret Vanderwall, Debbie Boole, Gary Darmain, and Anne Housko, Julie Hall, Michelle Fitzgerald, Lynn Eagers, Coralie Rose, Sharon Hodges, Robert Reiteri. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Ashley. I would also like to note that a great supporter of Vision Australia and former director of Vision Queensland and RBFQ, Des Knight, passed away recently. Our sympathies go to his family and colleagues. Now, a notice of this meeting has been given to members, providing the requisite notice. We have a quorum present with in excess of 20 members, so I formally declare this meeting open. I have been given 52 proxies. The minutes of the 2009 Annual General Meeting have, in keeping with modern business practice, been approved by the board and signed by myself. A copy of these minutes were circulated with the notice of meeting.
On Vision Australia Radio and associated stations of RPH Australia, we're bringing you the proceedings of the 2010 Annual General Meeting of Vision Australia. Chair of Vision Australia, Dr. Kevin Murfitt, now presents his report, and it's interesting to note that being blind, he's using a small audio device, nice technology, which is giving him his prompts as he presents.
Once again, many thanks to everyone in attendance, members, volunteers, clients, staff and donors. We sincerely appreciate the time and effort required to be with us here today during such a busy time of year. The board and I are very proud to hold this annual general meeting at our flagship centre in the heart of Brisbane. This is a key component to our property strategy. Ever since the merger of with Royal Blind Foundation Queensland in 2006, we have strived to provide better facilities and services to people throughout Queensland. The recent opening of this Coorparoo Centre, modern, accessible and totally funded, was a landmark achievement in the delivery of services to people in Brisbane and beyond. And the Vision Australia Board, particularly the Property Committee, chaired by my colleague Nick Carter, was instrumental in this achievement. I'm also proud to chair Vision Australia during a year of significant strategic achievements, which I'll give you an overview of. Confirmation of our vision and mission, the development of a new three-year strategic plan, and clarification of our core services and values. I'll talk a little more about our new strategic plan in a little bit, but first I'd like to emphasise what a difference the support from Vision Australia can make. As a client for many years, accessing the many services provided by Vision Australia makes a major difference to my life every day. I'll give just two examples. My seeing eye dog, Kane, who's ensconced under the table here, provided by the Seeing Eye Dog Orientation and Mobility Department, is a service that facilitates my mobility and independent access to the community. He provides me with companionship, confidence and independence as I travel around Australia and overseas. The second example that's really important to me is access to information. Whether that be through the power of Braille, getting material in other accessible formats, listening to our radio service, or utilising our iAccess digital services, being able to easily access current information relating to my employment or to my interests in current affairs or personal interests. It enables me to fully participate and belong in my community. Every client of Vision Australia would have their own examples across any number of our services. This is the breadth of our organisation. Individual solutions across a community of people. We're united by services that enable life change for all of us who are blind or have low vision. I'd now like to outline some of the purposes of the board. Together with my fellow directors, the Vision Australia Board works to ensure the achievement of our vision, mission, and objectives. We operate under a charter that clearly outlines the functions and responsibilities of the board and covers a wide range of compliance, risk, and reporting obligations, such as our annual report that we're dealing with today. Your board strongly believes that our organisation must also be transparent to members and the community. That's why we were so pleased with last year's annual report when it was judged in the top five shortlist of the PricewaterhouseCoopers Transparency Awards, a clear indication of our commitment to provide accessible information over and above the conventional reporting requirements. The board also has five committees that focus on key aspects of our governance. These are the Human Resources Committee, the Audit, Finance and Business Risk Committee, the Client Services Committee, the Property Committee, and the Board Development Committee. I wish to sincerely thank directors for their energy, willingness, and commitment to serving on the board and these committees that are vital for our organisation's growth and well-being. Vision Australia has always worked towards overcoming the challenges people with blindness or low vision face. But every day can bring a new challenge, be it personal or organisation-wide. And you can be certain that your board is always working to ensure the organisation is ready to meet the next challenge and the one after that. One way of measuring whether we're meeting or how we're meeting the challenges we're confronted with is our regular client surveys. Our client satisfaction ratings overall for the past year are at 88%, which, while very good, is something that we are striving to improve. As mentioned earlier, a guiding influence over major decisions, as well as everyday tasks, is our new strategic plan, which will see us through the next 3 years and provide direction further into the future. In developing our strategic plan, we have been working with clients to ensure we are responding to what they want. The plan is based on strong consultation with clients. The Client Representative Council and regional and local client groups have all given input. We've drawn also from our regular client satisfaction surveys and we have used external expertise such as Social Ventures Australia and Galileo Kaleidoscope, who ran focus groups and drew in independent client-based input to challenge and guide us. And I must say, our clients really responded. They were very generous with their time and robust with their suggestions. To be a vital organisation that will enable clients to live a rich and full life, clients believe that Vision Australia must be three things: facilitate independence by developing skills, that's described as confidence, must promote inclusiveness in society, described as advocacy, and encourage a community of like-minded people who understand my disability, described as belonging. So for clients, Vision Australia must have confidence, advocacy and belonging as core aims in our future. We will measure our progress towards these aspirations with five goals: providing increased services in response to increased need, increasing our income to provide more services, being more efficient in delivering services, maintaining our high satisfaction by striving for 9 out of 10 clients using our services being satisfied, and ensuring Vision Australia develops as the major authority of blindness and low vision services. Gerard will talk, he'll draw out a bit more on those five key objectives. Underpinning the strategic plan is the identification of 15 enabling services. While all services cannot at present be accessed everywhere, and many are at different stages of development, they are a clear statement of where we believe we can best add value to the blindness and low vision community. Over the next 3 years and into the future, these 15 enabling services include Braille, O&M, employment, recreation and adaptive tech training, to name a few, can be grouped into three focus areas: access to information, making the most of technology, and being part of the community. Providing these services at the highest standards cannot come about without the partnership, passion, and participation of our staff and volunteers. As such, in consultation during the year, we have identified some key values for the way we work. These are integrity, empathy, equality, accountability, and self-determination. Without integrity, empathy, and accountability, we cannot offer clients equality and self-determination. Through our client representative framework, we aim to get feedback about the challenges our clients face and to translate those issues into solutions. Some solutions are about the individual, such as the challenge of finding employment or modifying their existing employment to ensure they can still continue to do their work although they have vision loss. Other solutions are more broad and brought about by our advocacy team, which works to bring equality of access and inclusion for our clients into the wider community. accessible and secret voting at this year's federal election and to be used again in tomorrow's Victorian election is something that I and many others certainly value as a measure of our inclusion. Instead of having to rely on friends, family, or even a stranger to cast our vote. Finally, as we see the increasing awareness of Vision Australia as a leading provider of blindness and low vision services, and the benefits brought to service provision through the coming together of seven organisations into one, we see the strength in numbers bringing results. Those results will help ensure that we can continue to bring our services to the increasing number of Australians with blindness or low vision. Our services are at the core of everything we do, and the overriding challenge is to continue to provide those services as demand increases. I believe our strategic plan provides great guidance for tomorrow's challenges. Thank you.
Vision Australia Chair Kevin Murphitt. CEO Gerard Mensis now comes to the stage. He speaks for around 20 minutes. I hope you enjoy it.
And welcome, everyone. It's fantastic to be here. This is our first annual general meeting in this wonderful new building. And for those of you who were here at the opening, I now know that the plant is Star Jasmine. And it's growing there, and it's amazing to see how much it's grown in a very short space of time. It's our second AGM as Vision Australia in Queensland. And if my history is correct, it's the 144th AGM in a continuous history of service. It's fantastic that we're meeting here because I think this centre really symbolises the theme of my talk today, which is growth and sustainability. Now, Kevin has already highlighted why this building is a statement of growth and our commitment to growth in Queensland. But it's also a sustainable building. It's designed to meet the needs of staff, volunteers and clients in an environmentally friendly way. It has a 5-star sustainability rating. Natural lighting has been maximised. Renewable energy is actually manufactured on site with solar panels. Rainwater is harvested and heating and cooling is naturally managed as far as possible. It's a statement of our intention to stick around for another 144 years. Oh, hang on, people say. Do we actually need to be here for another 144 years? Haven't we cured blindness? Isn't avoidable blindness going to be eliminated by the year 2020? I think we actually have a message to give to the community. Unfortunately, only 50% of blindness today is preventable. Our ageing population will continue to see an explosion of low vision. The bionic eye is going to provide low vision as opposed to full vision for decades to come. In fact, even if we put our best statistics together, after the year 2020, the best we can hope for is a stable population of 600,000 people who are blind or have low vision in Australia. But it is likely that that number will continue to escalate. So we need to stick around, and we plan to stick around, and we need to tell people that blindness is an issue and a long-term issue that needs your support. And with the prediction that in the next 10 years there's actually going to be a doubling of the population from 300,000 to that 600,000 figure, we need to grow and grow at a rapid rate if we're going to respond. So given that our services are free and given that we only get a small amount of government money, the task is a challenging one for us. Hence the board has been doing much planning in how we can grow and be sustainable. It's always challenging too because as we do more, more is always asked for us. Indeed, Queensland is already calling for another centre like this to be built in the north. Yes, Maureen, it's in our plans. She's waving her hand in the air just to make sure that I really do get the message. It's in our plans, but we'll need your help and we will need government's help to get there. But we will do it and we intend to do it. And our plan, we hope, will help us get there. And Kevin asked me to sort of unpack the little 5 goals that we talked about in a little bit more detail. The first goal really is about growth. It's relating to the fact that we do need to increase the number of people that we serve. Currently, we're providing services to more than 47,000 clients across Australia, and that's an increase of 1,000 over last year, from 29 Vision Australia centres and 38 clinics throughout Australia. But our plan is to target at least 14,000 more people over the next 3 years. However, the tragedy in that target is, given the statistics that we have before us, there's actually going to be 28,000 people who are newly blind or have low vision in the next 3 years. So even though our growth plan is ambitious, we're only meeting half of the population. So we know that we need to do more. We need to tell government that we need to do more. We need to tell our donors and supporters that we need to do more. So therefore, we do need to increase our income if we're going to do it. So we've put that right up there as a second goal. We actually need to increase our income by about 30% if we can over the next 3 years. And we will need government to help us shoulder more responsibility in this task. And Julie, we're really grateful to the one-off generosity of the Queensland Government, who provided $10 million for this new centre. But we do call on the government and the opposition to guarantee us some recurrent funding for the huge growth in demand that I'm about to outline. It's an interesting statistic that we get $17 million a year from Victoria, but with Queensland and New South Wales' similar population need, we get $3 million from New South Wales and $2 million from Queensland. And clearly we need to tell our story more forcefully and better in each of those states. The fact that we need to see a lot more people, perhaps with not as much money, leads to our third goal, which really is about finding ways to do things differently. We need to work more efficiently if we are going to be sustainable for the long term. And the staff have embraced this goal with cautious enthusiasm because they are a hard-working group already. But we're not here for growth for growth's sake. We are about people. And that's why the fourth goal is a very important one for us. Kevin talked about our 88% satisfaction rating, but one that we're not satisfied with. We want to make sure that 9 out of 10 people who use Vision Australia services are completely satisfied, so we know that we are hitting the mark. We've got that goal there to remind us we are about people. And finally, we must ensure that Vision Australia is a major authority in blindness and low vision, that we have a great reputation and a great name. Satisfied clients and a strong reputation is vital if we are to win money from government, if we are to win money from the community. So that is why we've put these five goals together, because it's a plan designed to grow, but grow in a sustainable way. We know that we can do it because we've got much growth to celebrate already. In the 4 years since our merger with the Royal Blind Foundation of Queensland, the number of Queenslanders who are clients of Vision Australia has doubled to 4,000. During this time, we've already opened new centres in Cairns, and we've introduced new services, such as regular low-vision clinics at each of our Queensland centres, an outreach component to our independent living services. We've introduced adaptive technology consultancy and training services. We've introduced paediatric counselling services and orientation and mobility services. And it's this latter service that really indicates how demand grows, because in the short time we've been here, we've grown from 0.6 of a staff person offering orientation mobility services to 4 full-time staff offering orientation mobility services. But yet the waiting list remains very high. When we had 0.6 of a person, we had a waiting list of 12 months. We've now got 4 full-time people, but we've only managed to reduce the waiting list to 9 months. Why? Because demand has increased. And it shows that as we provide services, they are quickly taken up and demand increases. There is huge unmet need in this community. We've increased service staff in Queensland by 21, but we are still running to keep up. Another very important area where we can celebrate growth is in another area of fantastic workers in Vision Australia, and that's our seeing eye dogs, where the number of our working dogs is now 163, compared with 133 just last year. So this is a great result because it's our golden anniversary year as we celebrate 50 years of service for seeing eye dogs. We graduated 42 dogs last year compared with 30 in 2009. But again, the demand is growing. And to meet this demand, the number of puppies in training needs to increase by 120 over the next 3 years. So this too will require increased support. And just recently the Victorian government pledged $1.5 million to contribute to the redevelopment of our world-class Seeing Eye Dog Breeding Centre and Kennels in Kensington in Melbourne, which will also provide integrated accommodation and life training for people who are blind or have low vision. We are in the process of seeking a similar commitment from the Victorian opposition. Our newly established National Contact Centre is another example of how we are trying to do things better and more efficiently. This centre has handled over 150,000 calls and processed over 100,000 mail donations in the past year. Now, this is in fact an increase of 50% in the number of calls in just 12 months. Our technical leadership is also helping us cut the cost of distributing accessible content and helping us increase access to information and increase the choices of devices that people can use to access information in Australia today. Our National Library Service loaned over 800,000 items this year, up from about 760,000 items last year. We've also negotiated access now to over 100,000 titles on demand, compared to about 20,000 last year. Our innovative Felix Library for young children has increased the number of titles available for loan from 300 in 2009 to 367 at June last year, and now we've actually got 400 titles and over 1,000 Felix kit in circulation. And these kits are all handmade by volunteers. They're very complex, they're very detailed, and they're designed, of course, to help children maximise the use of all of their senses while they become braille ready. Our focus on timely and current information is evident by the fact that we've been able to increase the number of national daily and community regional newspapers we provide for download each day to 188, up from, I think, 122 last year. Our latest development in the library area has been the arrival of Bookshare, and Bookshare has helped us provide download access to 20,000 additional titles in BRF and DAISY text formats and a small number of audio files. It's really amazing what we're doing in the information technology area and the alternate format production area. It was only 2 years ago that we were producing 8 million pages a year of alternate format. We're now doing 35, 36 million pages a year of alternate format, but again, we're only scratching the surface. We must be a powerful advocate, and that's why we're really pleased to have grown over the last year our government relations and advocacy team. It's an important part of increasing our work and increasing accessibility to all areas of life. The team this year has made 25 submissions to government and has worked directly with 250 clients and families addressing discrimination relating to blindness and low vision. It's really an unacceptably high number in this developed country. The team has worked to make cinema sessions more accessible, with the heads of major cinemas now committing to a timetable that will see captioning and audio description of 242 cinema screens across Australia by the end of 2014. We'd like to see it faster, but currently less than 0.3% of all sessions are accessible, so we are at least growing the number. Opera is now becoming more accessible. Oh, yeah. But no, it's important. The first opera is being audio described earlier this month at the Sydney Opera House. And right here in Brisbane, it's very significant, given the award that we're about to announce later, that the Queensland Performing Arts Centre tonight will launch audio description at the famous musical West Side Story. So it's fantastic that's happening today. Another part of our very positive approach to advocacy is we've reintroduced some very important awards that we hope will highlight the importance of Braille. The Braille Book of the Year, which was recently run by Alexis Wright, the book is called Carpenteria. It's from the Miles Franklin list, and it was voted for by our clients. And it was a fantastic event. We had people from all around the world, because the World Blind Union executive was there, to really launch this award in a very prestigious setting. But for Queensland, I think it's more important to announce that we've just launched Vision Australia's 2011 Dickerson Literary Awards, which are open to all Australians who are legally blind. These historic awards were established in Queensland in 1921, but will now have a national profile through Vision Australia. These awards will strongly reinforce the importance of Braille to both Vision Australia and the wider community. We're also using these as part of our push for a global copyright treaty so that we can have increased access to content and further reduce our costs. And we work very closely with our worldwide partnership. And Marianne Diamond, one of our senior staff, who's also president of the World Blind Union, and Ron, our deputy chair, who introduced himself as the chair of the United Nations Committee Monitoring the Rights of People with Disability, are playing vital roles in helping win this worldwide treaty. In addition to this centre, we've actually officially opened two other major centres this year as well. Our $14.7 million facility at Macaulay Road, Kensington, and a new centre at Tamworth in New South Wales. So these are just some highlights of what has been an incredibly busy year. And believe me, I could be up here for hours talking about the amazing achievements of the staff team over the last 12 months. I encourage you to look at the annual report and to read about this amazing organisation that you support. So we're growing, but how can we maintain sustainability? Well, the staff are sick of me talking about the fact that we're not like a corporate organisation. Quality of service doesn't produce revenue for us because our services are free. It's people's relationship to us that gives us money, the donating community. So we have to build awareness. Vision Australia is a new name. Remember that. We had wonderful names from the past, but it was important to demonstrate a new organisation, an organisation that incorporated all the other organisations. So we needed a new and neutral name, Vision Australia. Already, that name has reached 74% prompted recognition, which is a pretty good outcome in just a very short space of time. But when we ask people, and we've been doing a lot of research on this so that we can be much more effective in our fundraising, when we've asked people what Vision Australia does, they've answered, you provide overseas aid to children. You do laser eye surgery. You work with homeless people. People have a very limited awareness of what the organisation actually does. So we need to grow that awareness if we're going to grow our income. To assist with, and I have to say this is a challenge too, and Trish Egan, our General Manager of Marketing, continually reminds me that we're not Coca-Cola. We don't have $22.5 million to spend in 6 months to launch a product called Mother. And if you haven't heard of it, it shows how hard it is to launch a product. We have spent $2 million over the last 5 years to get the name out there. So it's a fantastic result that we've actually got such a high recognition rate already. But we need to do more, and what at the moment we're doing is a pilot in Victoria, where we are doing a very extensive television, advertising, online and print campaign to raise the profile of Vision Australia, to tell people what we do and to celebrate the fantastic staff team that we have. If this campaign is successful, and it's called Today's Challenge, it highlights the challenges of blindness and how Vision Australia is working with people to overcome them. If this campaign is successful, it will go national next year, and we hope significantly improve our awareness and in turn significantly improve our donations. But we need you to help us in the meantime. Carry your Vision Australia bag to the supermarket. Wear your badge. Talk to us about your friends. We need to tell people about the amazing story. Read the annual report. Boast about the achievements. Celebrate the difference that your donation has made. Tell people that 30% of the clients of Vision Australia donate to the organisation because they need the organisation there and they're grateful for the free services that are provided. We need your support. What else are we doing to ensure sustainability for the future? We're working with a fantastic staff team, and that's why the Today's Challenge campaign also celebrates those people. We want people to know about the fantastic staff and volunteers at Vision Australia. They are our organisation's greatest asset. We value them, and we're proud to have achieved a fair and flexible employer recognition award from the Victorian Government for our efforts in this year. We're doing more, though. This year we have expanded and developed support for staff, and we've engaged a new General Manager for Organisational Development, Michael Hansen, and he's working with his team now to build a much stronger training and development and leadership program within the organisation. A strong and stable team is essential for growth and sustainability. We have passionate and dedicated staff. We want to ensure that they have every opportunity to grow. We're particularly proud of our staff because 22% of Vision Australia's staff are blind or have low vision. We are a benchmark organisation for the employment of people who are blind or have low vision. We want to demonstrate this to the wider community who continue to show reluctance to employ people who are blind or have low vision. 22% is a great result because it's increased from 18% in 2009. It demonstrates our commitment, and this high percentage also ensures we are very much grounded as an organisation in the challenges faced by the community whom we choose to work with. But our organisation is more than paid staff. We've got fantastic volunteers. We currently have got 5,114 registered volunteers, which is up from 500 more volunteers than last year. These people have worked 264,000 hours for us over the last year, and that contribution is massive. It's about $7 million in kind. We really thank them, and we thank them that they are in fact attracting and supporting more people to come and work with us each year. One special group of volunteers that I'd like to acknowledge is the board. They introduced themselves at the beginning of this meeting, and I hope that you would have heard the experience, the balance of skills, the great mix that we have. We have people who are blind, we have people who are sighted, but we have a great mix of skills dedicated to building this organisation. Can I thank you for your support, your hard and challenging questions, the fact that you don't always say yes to what management is asking for, but when you say no, you send us away with the challenge and we come back and we get a better decision out of it. I'd also like to thank the executive team here. They've been acknowledged earlier in the meeting. They also do long hours, very long hours. They're away from home for extended periods of time as we travel all around Australia, but they manage a smile, and I can assure you they are all driven by a desire to work for people who are blind or have low vision to ensure they can participate in every part of life. It's a privilege working with you guys. It's a fantastic team. Finally, I hope you got up early this morning and you watched Channel 9's Today Show, and you would have known that we were launching, of course, this morning, Vision Australia Carols by Candlelight. The spectacular is again on at Christmas Eve. I think it's the 74th year that we are doing it. 72nd, someone's correcting me. I hope you all watch the telecast on Channel 9. I hope you might listen to the simulcast with audio description that goes out across the RPH network. And while you do that, you might reflect on what a remarkable organisation Vision Australia is and what a remarkable year we've had and why you need to go out there and tell your friends and colleagues that they need to get behind us with their dollars and support us so that we can grow and continue to grow sustainably to support people who are blind or have low vision throughout Australia. Thank you.
Vision Australia CEO Gerard Mentor speaking at the AGM on the 26th of November, which we're covering on Vision Australia Radio and associated stations of RPH Australia. You'll hear people talk a lot around Vision Australia about Braille. Well, let's hear from one of Braille's very young advocates. A few weeks ago, in Talking Vision, our weekly program, 8-year-old Sam Velavanis from Melbourne was telling me about Braille in his life.
Braille machines. There's a Perkins Brailler, which I use all the time. Another one, an electronic one, a mount button Brailler, which we haven't got plugged in yet.
Mm-hmm.
And there's also a Braille note, which you can type on, but it doesn't come out on paper. It just comes out on the bottom part of the Braille note, so you can read it.
With the little dots popping up, do they?
Yes.
So that's like a little computer, is it?
Yeah, but except it talks too. It has sound system in it that makes it talk. And the mount button talks too, but the Perkins Braille isn't electronic. Only the mount button and the Braille note.
And do you prefer to read by listening to books or by reading Braille?
Well, I like reading Braille, and I wish I could have the Braille copy of the Daisy book that I was listening to so I can read it, because it sounds really interesting and I really, really want to read it one day.
Well, let's go back now to the Vision Australia AGM held in Brisbane on November the 26th, it's time for the receipt of reports.
We now turn to the receipt and consideration of this year's annual report and annual financial statements. The annual report has been distributed in accessible formats to members, and it's also being loaded on the Vision Australia website. At this point, I would like to also acknowledge the presence of our external auditor, Pat McClay from Deloitte. David, my company secretary, has there been any questions sent in from members?
No?
Okay, thank you. Okay, I now welcome any questions from the floor. Ashley has a roving mic, and so if you have a question, just raise your hand and he'll come to you. Any hands there? Okay, thank you. Thank you very much. As there are no questions, we'll now move to the next item of business. This is the election of directors. We've come to the announcement of the declaration of the result of the postal ballot for the election of directors for 2010. I'll now hand over to our company secretary, David Speyer, to announce the result.
As is the usual practice, a postal ballot has been conducted to fill the vacancies by the completion of the terms of directors determined in accordance with the Constitution. The ballot closed at 5 p.m. on Tuesday the 23rd of November, and Ernst & Young Chartered Accountants acted as scrutineers. Five candidates contested the four positions. Those four with the highest number of votes will be elected. The results of the postal ballot are, and in the order of the ballot paper, Keith Barton, 293 votes. Paul Gleeson, 310 votes. Tony Hamner, 287 votes. Teresa Smith-Ruig, 309 votes. And John Lee, 133 votes. Accordingly, I declare the following have been duly elected as directors for a new three-year term from the closing of this meeting: Keith Barton, Paul Gleeson, Tony Hamner, and Teresa Smith-Ruig.
Thank you, David. I congratulate those directors elected and look forward to working with them in the future. I also thank John Lee for his continued support of Vision Australia. There has been no other business notified, so I therefore declare the formal AGM closed and we'll move on to the other agenda items.
Yes, many more items to come on this Talking Vision special presentation of proceedings on the day of the Vision Australia Annual General Meeting taking place in Brisbane on Friday, November the 26th. Vision Australia has quite an extensive client consultative framework, and here to talk about that is the Chair of the Client Representative Council, Stephen Belbin.
I would like to welcome everybody and certainly thank Kevin Murphitt for the opportunity, and indeed Vision Australia the opportunity to talk for the next few minutes about the client consultative framework. As mentioned, I'm currently the chair of the Client Representative Council, commonly known as the CRC, and I want to talk about three particular areas around growth, representation, and the opportunity for clients to be able to have input into the future direction of Vision Australia. And I think that pretty well sums up what the client consultative framework is all about. It's about that opportunity to have input, to speak frankly on occasions, and certainly to have that information taken forward through the actual framework, through the different levels, and to the organisation at a board level in some stages, and certainly be heard and implemented across the organisation in a lot of situations. I want to just explain briefly about the framework and the structure of the framework, because I think there are some people here who don't, who may not be aware of the structure. Okay, firstly, we have the local client groups, which are often referred to as the grassroots part of the structure. The structure is like a pyramid, I guess. There's three parts to the client consultative framework. The local client groups, as I said, are the grassroots. They're at the base. And what they actually do is they actually have an opportunity. They meet quite regularly, and they meet and often discuss. It could be issues, or it could be around general discussion for offerings to suggestions for improvements around service delivery, but usually around often around a local nature. So, in other words, they work very closely with the local offices and the local staff at those offices and with the team managers. So they're a very important part of the client consultative framework because, obviously, as I said, they're the grassroots. They're the people that that meet, and you know, their meetings may not be as formal as some other parts of the structure, but certainly are very, very important, the input, because they're the people on the ground and they're the people that I guess are out there and really walking the talk as far as, you know, what people who are blind or have low vision may need in the local community. I'd like to talk about the LCGs, another part about the LCGs. It's obviously very important because they're the grassroots and the people that provide that feedback from, I guess, from the community directly. It's important that we interact and foster those groups and obviously encourage growth of those groups to form in different areas. It's been a good year for the last year for growth around local client groups. And there's been quite a few new ones that have formed. I just want to just quickly mention where they are by town and by region. Region 1 has had very good success. They've got a new local client group in the last 12 months in Ballarat. Geelong Recreation Group is a local client group as well, the new one. And Winambal local client group is another one. So there's three in there in Region 1. Region 4... has a brand new group as of a week ago, which is the Ballina Blind and Low Vision Support Group. And, of course, people here would be very interested in this one. Region 5, which is up this way, have the Coorparoo Local Client Group, Ipswich Vision Impaired Support Group. And I think that in itself, just the growth of those brand new local client groups and the spread of whereabouts they're located across the organisation will serve well to filling in some of the areas that may not have had representation in the past. So we constantly, as I said, encourage those groups to be formed. And I encourage anybody who wants to talk about how to create a local client group and so forth to catch up with me after the meeting. The next level of the consultative framework is the regional client committees, which is another level which is quite important. How that committee is basically formed is usually through people being elected as representatives for those regional client groups, and each region will elect representatives, but they'll also, some of the regional client committees will actually have co-opted members on that group. They have an option of co-opting up to four members, and those may be around particular areas of need that might not be represented in an area. For example, it may be one region has got a parent who was a parent of a child with vision impairment, which is a very important area. So that person was co-opted on for those particular skills onto the regional client committee. So that particular level of the committee also works very closely with not only the local officers but with the regional managers of each region. And those regional managers are actually ex officio members of those regional client committees. So as you can see, there's a very strong link there back through the managers at that level. And, of course, regional client committees also get the opportunity to take issues that may be of a systemic nature and may certainly be may need to go to the CRC, the Client Representative Council, so they can actually forward those on to the Client Representative Council, which I'll talk about now. The Client Representative Council, of course, referred to as the CRC, is the peak body in the whole makeup of the client consultative framework. So we, the council, work very closely with the organisation across all levels. We have a particularly strong relationship and opportunity to interact with the management executive and also with the board. So it's a very exciting opportunity to be a part of that actual council. And it's also, I think, a clear message that the framework in its current current form and the reporting mechanisms actually provide information to be, you know, taken right from the grassroots level, right through, very, in a transparent way, right through to the top. And I can assure you from the next couple of things that I'm going to mention, we'll give an example this year, and I'll finish up with this, of some of the things that the Client Representative Council have been involved in this year, which will give you, I think, an indication of how dedicated and open Vision Australia has been and continues to be with having input from clients to steer the organisation in a positive direction for the future. We've been involved this year in, and I've consulted with on a number of important reviews this year that are still ongoing. One is around children's services within Vision Australia. We have members that are on that actual Children's and Service Advisory Committee who link in with that particular committee when they meet, and it's made up of client representatives, staff of the organisation, external people from Blind Citizens Australia and from other organisations as well, externally to Vision Australia. And those particular client representatives, CRC representatives on that committee, feed back to the CRC, and we get our regular updates and reports at the CRC level. The other area that we've been involved in this year is the low vision clinic. There's a review around the low vision clinic services, and that's a similar situation where we have members of the CRC on that review committee. And same again, information is taken backwards and forwards. The CRC has kept abreast and certainly across all documentation and decisions. And we certainly provide input, and it's quite evident from minutes and discussions that the input that we provide, while not always maybe able to be taken on board, in most cases is certainly taken on consideration and in some cases certainly implemented in the bigger picture. Finally, I'm just about to wind up with something very, very exciting. Probably one of the most exciting things this year for the Client Representative Council, in conjunction with the regional client committees and the local client groups, is the opportunity to work with the organisation, Vision Australia, in creating what's called a Reconciliation Action Plan, or a RAP for short. And basically, what will happen there is, at the moment, in 2008, the Client Representative Council co-opted a representative for people who are Aboriginal or Torres Strait Islander descent, and we saw a need in that area to have further representation. That representative was Shalar Daniels Mays. In 2009, it was then seen the support and interest in the organisation and the need in the wider community was formed with Shalar's absolute dedication and passion, was formed the Indigenous Working Group, and that was a group of people who are Indigenous background, Vision Australia staff, client representatives from different levels, regional and the Client Representative Council, to look at raising awareness and about the needs and certainly the importance of a partnership between the Indigenous community and large organisations such as Vision Australia. Now, that particular working group, at the start of this year, a proposal was put forward to say to Vision Australia, well, look, we really appreciate what's happened here. There's been great support. The Indigenous Working Group is going, well, let's go that one step further and develop a Reconciliation Action Plan for the organisation to be able to say, well, this is our understanding and this is certainly our contribution and this is how important we see it as a partnership between Vision Australia and the Indigenous community as well. So what happened was there's been a process where the CRC, in consultation with Vision Australia and the executive, there has been a document being put together at the moment, a terms of reference. It's very exciting. And hopefully, shortly, that will go through, and what will happen is we're hoping that it'll all start to form and fall into place. But in closing, it couldn't have been possible. None of this could be possible without the absolute passion, dedication of a, the most tireless bunch of people that I've ever had to lead in lots of roles that I've had in the leadership area, who'd never asked for anything too much. And I just want to go through, in conclusion, I want to go through just quickly their name and area, because I think it's important that they're mentioned. So in no particular order, the members of the CRC and the representative members of the CRC are as follows. I'd like to thank Ernie Drew from Region 2. I'd also like to thank Brian Hunter from Region 1. Peter Davis, a fairly new member from Region 3. John Keep from Region 4. Trevor Rice from Region 5. Also, I'd like to also acknowledge two new positions on the CRC, which are representatives, positions of service-specific consultative committees, and you feel free to ask me later on a little bit more about those. But basically, they're representatives, Jody Hoger, who's a representative for the iAccess Advisory Committee, and Bill Jolly, who's here today in the audience, who is the representative for Seeing Eye Dogs and Orientation Mobility Advisory Committee, and I hope I got that right. And, of course, our two co-opted members, I'm sorry, Shalar Daniels-Mays, who, as I said before, is a representative for Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people, and Rosemary Wills, who is our representative of a parent of a child with vision impairment. So, finishing up, none of this would be possible, but what it does say to me, that it is coming into fruition, it does send a clear message, and it's a very passionate message, and that Vision Australia is really that one step closer to their mission statement, that in the future, people who are blind or have low vision will be able to participate in every part of life they choose, and I know I'd like to be a part of that. Thank you.
Stephen Belbin, Chair of Vision Australia's Client Representative Council, speaking at the AGM held in Brisbane on the 26th of November. This is a Talking Vision special on Vision Australia Radio and associated stations of RPH Australia. Now we come to the presentation from the guest speaker. He is Lawrence Springborg, Deputy Leader of the Opposition in Queensland, introduced now by Chair Kevin Murphitt.
Mr. Lawrence Springborg, Deputy Leader of the Opposition. Shadow Attorney General, Shadow Minister for Trade, Shadow Minister for Industrial Relations, and Member for Southern Downs. At just 21, Lawrence Springborg became the youngest person ever elected to the Queensland Parliament as the Member for Carnarvon in the 1989 election. The Springborg family first migrated to Australia from Denmark in the 1800s. They settled in the southern part of the Queensland Darling Downs, where Lawrence, Linda and their four children live today. At 29, Lawrence became Queensland's youngest ever Member of Cabinet when he was sworn in as Minister of Natural Resources in 1998. By the then Premier, Rob Borbidge. In February 2003, Lawrence was elected as Leader of the Opposition. At just 34 years of age, he became the youngest political leader in Queensland since Red Ted Theodore became Premier in 1919. Lawrence immediately launched his campaign to modernise the National Party and bring about unity on the non-Labor side of politics. This came to fruition in 2008 with the merge of the two Conservative parties to create the LNP. Following the 2009 election, Lawrence was elected Deputy Leader of the Opposition. Lawrence has a strong interest in reading, political history and astronomy, an interest that actually drove him to build his own conservatory. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome to the stage Mr. Lawrence Springborg.
Uh,
Thank you very much, Kevin, for that very warm introduction, and I think you've certainly turned up the pressure on me as a consequence of that introduction. Can I just say at the outset, though, ladies and gentlemen, it is fantastic to be here at what is a magnificent purpose-built facility, and I had the time a little while ago before I walked in here to be able to walk through and to see some of the great services which are offered here, and what a wonderful place it is for serving the needs of those people who have vision impairment in Queensland and consequently across our nation. So can I congratulate everyone who's been involved in it? It is a magnificent facility, and I think you should all be very, very proud of your efforts. But can I start today in the time available to me by firstly apologising, ladies and gentlemen, for the Leader of the Opposition, Mr. John Paul Langbrook, who was originally invited to come along and to speak, but unfortunately, due to prior engagements, wasn't able to accept the very privileged and generous invitation which you have presented to him. However, John Paul has asked that I pass on his best wishes and gratitude for the privilege of the invitation. And from my part, it is indeed a very great honour for me as Deputy Leader of the Opposition to be here today among such determined, passionate and self-motivated people who strive to achieve justice for the vision impaired in Queensland and Australia. Vision Australia is an organisation that has a stellar reputation within the community and right across government. In preparing for today, I contemplated how I believe we were going as a community in removing barriers for people that are blind or have low vision. And in the time available to me, Mr. Chairman, I'm going to basically talk about some general principles. It is fair enough to muse that we've come a long way, but from a politician, that can sound like very empty rhetoric. Just to say we've come a long way from a dispatch box or from a rostrum presents the situation as though it has happened inevitably. And just to say we've come a long way makes it seem as though we've all taken an equal share of the heavy lifting, when it's plain that some have devoted their lives and careers to the cause and have strived and have achieved with extraordinary and enormous distinction, and that is many people in this room. I am confident today that many such people are present in this room, and it's no coincidence Vision Australia has earned the reputation which I referred to. The sentence usually following "we've come a long way" is just as predictable, and that is, but we've still got a very, very long way to go. And that is certainly the case. As lawmakers, advocates, activists, or even just concerned citizens, we cannot claim that justice has properly been served until every blind person or person with a vision impairment can, as your website put it, access and fully participate in every part of their life as they choose. That is, to be able to reach their full and capable potential. This, it seems to me, is the challenge that lies before us all, to enable, empower and build capacity in our respective roles so that this becomes reality for more and more people in Australia. Justice in this sense is not about preventing the actions of wrongdoers so much as it is about permitting opportunity. We can't prevent every circumstance that brings impairment or disability into people's lives. We simply don't have that power. No matter how much we care about someone, we cannot jump hurdles on their behalf, and we deprive a person of their own sense of achievements if we try. But we can and should retain this notion of justice foremost in our mind. Viewed this way, having a just society should be no more daunting a task than to allow people the chance to live the lives their attitude dictates within the bounds of maximum possible self-responsibility and the opportunity to maximise their community contribution. The strength of character, tenacity and poise shown by many visually impaired people would be unstoppable forces if we ever did happen to reach that goal. For its part, the LNP is proud of the clarity of its disability services platform. We retain our focus on getting the basics right, the provision of services that fit the individual, not the other way around, and the administration of processes that keep those individuals in the picture. And I would say also, Mr. Chairman and ladies and gentlemen, that as far as that platform is concerned, it underpins our very, very strong and immutable principles. But at the moment, we are also undergoing a significant policy upgrade and debate within the community and within our own process to ensure that those principles and philosophies meet and match the expectations of the general community, including those people in our community with a disability. Governments must take their roles in disability services seriously, seriously enough to acquit every dollar with care and treat every concerned party with sincerity and respect. When disability brings a person or their family into contact with an agency of government, it is that government and that minister's responsibility to ensure that every effort leaves the individual better off. That has to be the principle that underpins our actions. That is the most important of starting points. If large numbers of people feel that this is very definitely not the case, then the alarm bells should be starting to ring. But my time here today isn't best used on a critique of the current government or any other government. It is better for me to convey the tenets and principles of the party which I represent and the administration which we would put into play. We will affirm the right of individuals to make informed choices about their needs and the shape of their future. We will support and uphold the right of people with disabilities to live independently if the desire is there and capability allows, and give them every opportunity to contribute to their maximum potential. That is a fundamental principle and philosophy of the party which I represent. And we believe that the knowledge skills presented by non-government service providers are the backbone of the sector. And the reason that we believe that is that we believe that the whole community orientation and individual focus that comes from that can give far better outcomes sometimes than strict government agencies. That is also a very, very important approach that we bring to this. These bodies deserve nothing other than to be complemented by a government that provides transparent funding mechanisms to enhance their valuable work. Governments must be a facilitator of solutions, not a part of this problem. Vision Australia needs this calibre of support like few others. I was surprised and somewhat worried to read the facts and projections put to me about blindness and vision loss that confront the nation and in turn our state and I suppose also our world. An ageing population and a likely increase in type 2 diabetes diagnosis will contribute to the challenge. And the World Health Organisation is amongst those groups that forecast a doubling of the number of Australians with blindness or low vision by the year 2020. NGOs and peak bodies can either panic and squabble with government about how much extra money they'll need to fend off a crisis, or they undertake the best planning, research and policy formulation their resources will afford. And it seems to me as if Vision Australia and their partners have set themselves to the latter task. It would be presumptuous of me in the absolute extreme if I tried to tell those present today about the sector's requirements. As you know this more than I could ever hope to ever know. And you carry the desires, needs and aspirations of your members in the safest possible set of hands. In a perfect world, we wouldn't need to differentiate between people with a disability and those people without a disability. But this is probably the ultimate pipe dream. Within the current system, you have to accept the definitions of disability in order to gain access to services and support, and therefore an enormous amount of effort goes into identifying the problem to qualify for funding or to enliven a debate around significant unmet need. It then often degrades into a statistical argument, and people with real needs are often the victims of this process. Data gathering and prevarication and tokenism sometimes are the only outcome of this process. I have real difficulty personally in saluting a system where 52% of the money allocated for community services goes into administering the 48% of money which actually goes into the support groups and individuals. A good government is a facilitator of solutions in disability services. It is a lawmaker, an agenda setter, a custodian of funds, and should target accordingly. But it will not and cannot execute these tasks well enough to matter if it doesn't appreciate with all of you and many others and the things that you very much have dedicated yourself to over such a long period of time with an enormous reputation for achievement. Organisations like Vision Australia enable people to change their lives, and also government must better make sure that they let them do this. Mr. Chairman, ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much for the opportunity to present to you today, and good luck from here on in. Thank you.
Joe Lawrence. We've got a token of our appreciation here for you, which Ashley will audio describe.
Good morning again. It's Ashley Wood, and I'll briefly describe the gifts that Kevin is giving to Mr. Springborg. In the purple Vision Australia tote bag is a wooden bowl made out of Quilla timber. It is in a fruit bowl style. It's filled with chocolates and was handcrafted here in the workshop at Cooperoo as part of the recreation program in our Independent Living Services division. There are also five Christmas baubles as part of our wonderful relationship with Maya, who are the presenting partner for Vision Australia's Carols by Candlelight. The baubles are individually designed by famous Australians such as Jennifer Hawkins and fashion designers such as Wayne Cooper and Bettina Liano. There is finally a large print calendar for 2011 that features artwork from 12 of our clients. Both the calendar and the baubles can be purchased from our equipment solutions shop. Thank you very much.
Thanks very much, Lawrence. Your obvious commitment to disability and blindness in particular is extremely encouraging, and we are very keen for our government relations people to keep working with you in developing your future disability strategies. Thank you. Thank
you. Kevin Murphy talking about Lawrence Springborg there, Deputy Leader of the Queensland Opposition. By the way, the little descriptions along the way are coming from Ashley Wood, who's National Manager Communications with Vision Australia. From what Kevin Murphitt and Gerard Mensis have been talking about earlier, you'd appreciate that Vision Australia is very much concerned with influence. So I want to tell you about the work of our policy and advocacy team. One thing they do is monitor and work to influence significant national developments such as the switch over to digital television. The Vision Australia General Manager for Policy and Advocacy is Michael Simpson, and he's a member of the federal government's Digital Television Switchover Customer Reference Group. He told me recently on Talking Vision about the barriers in the transition process for people with vision loss.
There are two barriers, really. One is the accessibility of the devices themselves. So either the set-top boxes, which is an intermediate step where you buy a set-top box to pick up the signal and then convert it to analog and feed it into your old analog television. Or you go straight to purchasing a new television, and it would be very hard to buy something that's not digital capable these days. And it's about the usability of the equipment itself, because most of these devices are either driven by visual menus. So you can have buttons that have multiple modes, and you have to be able to view what's on that visual menu to know what mode you're in. So both with the televisions and the set-top boxes, there are issues around the around using the devices themselves if they don't have text-to-speech capability. The other aspect, of course, is accessing the broadcast content, because in addition to broadcasting the digital signal, which mostly presents a visual image on the screen and digital sound, there's no capability as yet for people who are blind or have low vision to be able to access the print-only information on the digital television.
Like the program guide?
Yeah, and those sorts of things are presenting our clients with real concerns.
Vision Australia's National Manager, Policy and Advocacy, Michael Simpson. We come now to the presentation of the three Vision Australia awards, a client services award, an individual award, and a corporate award.
As a partnership between people who are blind, sighted, or have low vision, Vision Australia understands the importance of acknowledging the invaluable contributions made by members of our community. For this reason, we established the Vision Australia Awards, which were handed out for the first time at our 2006 AGM. They're our way of thanking those generous organisations and individuals who give of their time and resources to support our work. Recipients are chosen by Vision Australia's Board of Directors in recognition of their tremendous support of Vision Australia. Right, our first presentation is the presentation of our Vision Australia Client Services Award, which our Client Representative Council recommended be awarded to Christine Simpson. Now, Christine, just relax while I read a little bit of a lengthy citation. Come on. Before I read Christine's citation, though, I would like to acknowledge the other two Client Service Award nominees, namely Ruth Mercer and Linda Barnes. Their contributions are valued and recognised. Now, Christine Simpson was born and raised in Melbourne, the eldest of seven children, of whom the first four were born totally blind, despite no family history of blindness. Her education began at the RVIB Residential Nursery School when aged two, and she left school with a leaving certificate, aged four. No, about 16, I think. Attributing much of her success to the positive attitudes, love and Christian faith of her parents, Christine has been a role model, inspiration and leader among people who are blind or have low vision throughout her adult life. She has typified Vision Australia's passion for excellence and problem solving and for over 30 years. Christine has contributed to the work of blindness agencies, to Blind Citizens Australia, the Australian Braille Authority, to Radio for the Print Handicapped and other communications media that reaches people who are blind right across Australia. Some of Christine's many achievements include, I just couldn't list them all, being elected to the Board of Blind Citizens Australia in 1984, where she served for more than 10 years, holding office as National Secretary and then Vice President, Membership and Development, being the developer and manager of the Vision Information Hotline in 1986, Australia's first telephone-based blindness-specific information service, hosted by the Association for the Blind, now Vision Australia. Being an adult braille instructor for RVIB in 1989, where she developed a telephone-based tuition program to support braille teaching to people in remote locations. She mastered hand-on-hand signing so she could offer braille teaching to adult students who were both blind and hearing impaired. Christine was promoted to referrals coordinator, where her organisational ability and talent for putting newly blinded people at ease was recognised. Since 2000, Christine has added an Aspirations Award. Oh, she's headed up Aspirations, the national newsletter for Blindsmiths Australia's women's branch. In 2009, she was honoured by the branch as the recipient of its Aspirations Award, recognising her leadership and inspiration to women who are blind throughout Australia. In 2001, Christine joined the Tilly Aston Customer Council, the consumer input structure of Vision Australia Foundation, which is now Vision Australia. She served on the council until the merger of agencies to form Vision Australia in 2004. And then she served as an inaugural member of Vision Australia's Client Representative Council, which Stephen has described so well earlier. In May this year, Christine was appointed as the Australian Braille Authority's chair. Through her demonstrated leadership skills, organisational ability, empathy with people who are blind or have low vision, attention to detail, and commitment to meet individual client needs, Christine is clearly a worthy recipient of Vision Australia's Client Services Award for 2010. Please congratulate Christine and welcome her.
It's Ashley Wood again, and I'll just describe the award that Kevin's presenting Christine with. It's a cylindrical 19 centimetre high Vision Australia Client Service Award. It has three horizontal bands, starting from the bottom with a small purple bar, followed by a bar of deep green, and then topped by a 12 centimetre high silver band that dominates the award. Text and Braille on the award say, Client Service to Vision Australia. Over to you, Christine.
Thank you, Ashley. And thank you, Kevin, also. Well, what does that leave me to say? I feel honoured and totally surprised that I should be the recipient of this year's Vision Australia Client Service Award. Of the 50,000 or thereabouts clients that Vision Australia services, it certainly surprises me that my achievements have been noted as worthy of the award this year. So I do say thank you. Being the eldest of seven children, as Kevin said earlier, I had plenty of opportunity to start my leadership and role modelling skills at a very early age. With six younger brothers and sisters, I had plenty of practice in all kinds of situations. And with encouraging parents of Bill and Eileen Jolly, we couldn't have asked for better. Right from the beginning, they determined that each of their seven children would have the best opportunities in life for education, for life skills, and the opportunity to do and pursue the goals that we set for ourselves. As a person working with a vision impairment, both my professional career and my volunteer career, I had plenty of opportunities there to draw on my personal experiences and to be able to assist others. And there was many a time when a Braille lesson got a little bit waylaid, or perhaps a conversation with someone who was ringing in looking for assistance with the vision information line, where I'd have to dig deep into my own resources and my own experiences or that of my friends to be able to assist people who were now recently losing their vision and needed some help and some guidance and often some belief that there was a future without sight. There were many other roles, and as Kevin mentioned, my role with Blind Citizens Australia when I produced their National Women's Branch magazine, Aspirations. That was over a period of 8 years, and some people referred to that magazine as the Women's Weekly Magazine for Blind Women. This was really something that we were very proud of, and as editor and producer of that magazine, we really did work there to use the personal experiences of blind and vision impaired women to assist others. And of course it carried its columns of recipes and notices and book reviews, but importantly it allowed blind women the opportunity to share their own experiences with other blind women. And there are a couple of women in this room who not only contributed to that magazine, but also were able to draw from it the support they needed at various times. So to all of them, I say thank you. When I was at school, I had a teacher in the junior secondary school class, Mrs. Essie Ether. Mrs. Ether taught me many things in the few years that I was her student, but there are some that really do stick in my mind. She told us all that we needed to be able to speak publicly. We needed to be able to speak on our feet and make ourselves understood. We needed to be able to debate, and to debate on all kinds of subjects. Or perhaps it was to argue, I'm not sure. We needed to be role models for other blind people, and we needed to work to do so. And most importantly, we needed to grow up as leaders within the blindness community, both within Australia and more widely across the world. Within the room today, not only myself, but other students were Bill Jolly and Ron McCallum. Apart from us, Marianne Diamond, President of World Blind Union, was one of her students, as were many others, not here today, but students who have achieved exceptional things throughout their lives. Mrs. Ether, I hope we've done you proud. Finally, I'd like to say thank you to the person or persons who put my nomination forward to the Client Representative Council. I'd like to say thank you to the Council for accepting that nomination and choosing it to be this year's winner. And to the board members of Vision Australia, thank you for ratifying their decision. It really does mean a lot to me. I say thank you to my husband, John, who, without his constant support and encouragement, I wouldn't have achieved many of the things that I've been able to achieve today. Thank you, John, and thank you, Vision Australia.
Thanks, Christine. You're a great friend as well as a colleague.
Can I be a little indulgent and mention that I'm one of the six siblings of big sister Christine? She touches many people. We love her a lot. You're tuned to a Talking Vision special covering the annual general meeting of Vision Australia on Vision Australia Radio and associated stations of RPH Australia. I'm Stephen Jolly. Great to be with you. We come now to recognition of another outstanding woman.
Our next award is going to a person who's provided me with hundreds of hours or facilitated hundreds of hours of entertainment, and I'm sure many other thousands of people, including a lot of yourselves, here today. The Vision Australia Award for an Individual, which this year is being presented to Marjorie West AM. Marjorie West has been a volunteer at Vision Australia and predecessor organisations for almost 26 years. She's a strong and passionate advocate of providing equal access to information for people who are blind or have low vision. Marjorie began working with radio for the print handicapped, now Vision Australia Radio, as a presenter in 1983. Soon after, she accepted the role of community liaison officer and added speaking engagements to her repertoire. As if this wasn't enough, Marjorie was one of the first six Australians to be trained in audio description in 1991. And her leadership of the service has extended throughout Australia as the coordinator of audio description until May this year. Marjorie provided audio description training and support in Brisbane, Adelaide, Perth, Canberra, Albury, and Geelong. To give just a taste of Marjorie's achievements, she has trained volunteers from Royal Blind Society, now Vision Australia, so that audio description could be introduced to the Sydney Olympic Games in 2000. Audio described the Moomba Parade with ABC broadcaster Keith Glover for many years from atop the outside broadcast van. Assisted in the broadcast of the call of both state and federal elections, live to air on a number of occasions. Audio described TV programs such as The Lure of the Land and The Man from Snowy River live on the radio. Recorded approximately 800 Guest of the Week programs and around 250 Talking Point programs. She recorded 20 books for serialisation over the radio. Marjorie showed her great spirit of adventure as one of the participants in the Kanara Great Race in 1986. This is the first I've read of this, and it's amazing. 25 teams participated, and one was from the Association of the Blind, now Vision Australia, and members included people who were blind. Competitors dressed in old-fashioned costumes travelled from Sydney to Melbourne in a 1905 steam engine, vintage fire engine, vintage cars and motorbikes, Tiger Moth aircraft and hot air balloons. Marjorie was the roving reporter and phoned into the radio station each day reporting on the team's progress. The race finished on the banks of the Yarra River in Melbourne in front of Her Majesty the Queen. Vision Australia came in second place and received $10,000. Marjorie has not restricted her achievements and enthusiasm to the benefits just of Vision Australia. She was State Commissioner for Guides Victoria for 5 years, as well as past Australian President. She's a past member of the Queen's Trust, an ANZAC of the Year Award winner, an Elder of the Uniting Church, past member of the Stewardship of Australia Committee, Life Governor and past Board Member of the Association for the Blind, now Vision Australia, and as a member of the Order of Australia, of course. At over 80 years young, Marjorie continues to be as a presenter at Vision Australia Radio, a member of the audio description team, as well as performing speaking engagements as a member of the Community Engagement Speakers Network. Congratulations, Marjorie.
It's Ashley Wood again, and Kevin is presenting Marjorie with a cylindrical 26-centimetre high Vision Australia Award for an individual. From the bottom layer up, it is predominantly gold and features two purple bands separated by a smaller silver band and a black stripe around its 21-centimetre circumference. Text and braille on the award say, "For service to Vision Australia." Over to you, Marjorie.
Kevin Murfitt, ladies and gentlemen, I'm a girl guide. And in 1983, a very special guiding friend of mine, Marge Lane, had been asked by the CEO of the then Association for the Blind, John Wilson, to find some volunteers for a little radio station starting up, radio for the print handicapped. And she asked me if I would be interested. So, as you've just heard, I became an early morning presenter and still continue in this role. There are so many memories of those early days of the radio station. And, of course, the Rotary Club of Waverley were the ones who gave us the outdoor broadcast caravan, which enabled us to go to many different venues and broadcast live, and I would do interviews at the same time. It was very exciting. And events like Moomba and the Kooyong Fair, as Kevin mentioned, and the Kunara Great Race. I could never forget that. That was so special. And we did come second after Tony Barber came first, if you remember him. And we were second, and yes, we were given $10,000. And audio description, that very special part of my life too. It was started in 1991 by Marge Lane, and then the very next year, because of ill health, she was not able to continue, and that's when I took over. And we also were given $20,000 from the Rotary Club of Hawthorne to buy the equipment that we needed. And we were trained, six of us, as you heard, by Dr. Margaret Fansteel, who started the service in America to enable people who were blind or had low vision to enjoy live theatre independently. And isn't that the most important thing in anyone's life, to be independent? And we did do some audio description for two television programs, as well as Sea Change and Water Rats. And that was a very unique service because it was via the radio station. Finally, and most importantly, our clients. It is such a privilege to get to know our clients. Ladies and gentlemen, I do hope that in some small way I can make a difference to people's lives. And Kevin, I would like to say a very sincere thanks for this award. I shall treasure it.
Thanks, Marjorie. You're truly an inspiration to us all.
Marjorie West. Now, while I've got a moment, I thought I might show you how audio description works with a movie. On a recent Talking Vision program, John Simpson, National Manager, Audio Description Services with Vision Australia, took us through this, playing two versions of the same clip.
The first is a small soundbite from a recent Australian movie called Rogue, and you'll hear it without audio description, and there's no dialogue in this piece, so the listener will perceive the sounds of nature with no explanation of what's happening. We'll then run that same piece again with the addition of audio description.
Okay, let's go. We've got this little segment from the movie Rogue. Here's the raw audio.
Let's hear the same piece again with the addition of audio description.
A herd of wild buffalo graze among some trees by the water. They're charcoal-coloured with long horns curving upward from their foreheads. White herons perch on their backs. One buffalo makes its way to the water's edge, licking its lips and sniffing the air. The water ripples gently around water lily buds and blossoms breaking its surface. The buffalo's moist nose glistens as it sniffs. A group of low-flying birds is reflected in the lake's surface. The buffalo lowers its head to drink. A crocodile's jaws clamp the buffalo's head and yank it forward into the lake. As the crocodile drags on its prey, the buffalo herd nearby stand to attention. They begin to gallop away as the water churns around the struggling pair. The white herons take flight. Back at the lake, the croc and the buffalo are nowhere to be seen. Only a patch of ripples that gradually subsides.
Nature can be cruel. That's a little of audio description brought to us by John Simpson, Vision Australia's National Manager, Audio Description Services. And we're bringing you coverage of the proceedings of Vision Australia's annual general meeting that took place in Brisbane on November the 26th. And going back to the final of the three awards now, this is the Vision Australia Award Corporate. It was presented to News Limited, and again, Kevin Murfitt.
This will be received by Jamie Walker, Queensland Bureau Chief for the Australian newspaper. And Jamie, I've got a citation, not so much about you, but you just relax. Vision Australia has established a strategic partnership with News Limited based on two key and separate relationships. The first part of the relationship came through access to daily newspapers for people who are blind or have low vision or are print disabled. News Limited has freely provided a commercial news feed service for many years to Vision Australia. Originally, approximately 26 newspapers were available for telephone access, representing major News Limited publications around Australia. During the past 5 years, Vision Australia has developed the iAccess service, converting newspapers into an accessible format that are available for download anytime the person chooses. As this development has gained traction, Vision Australia has continued to source more and more content from News Limited. This partnership has developed into a strong and vibrant relationship, and Vision Australia makes regular contact and presentations to News Limited, showing how we make the newspaper content accessible and how, in turn, News Limited newspapers are used by people who are blind, low vision or print disabled. Today, Vision Australia receives approximately 180 newspapers from News Limited, as well as a number of magazines. Last year, the newspaper generated nearly 35,000 loans, over 95% being those provided by News Limited. We currently have 1,062 clients registered for this service, and newspaper circulation represents around 82% of all online usage. This commitment represents a significant contribution to the volume of accessible information available to the wider print disability community. The second part of the relationship is a media partnership with the Australian newspaper. In 2008, Vision Australia formed an official partnership with one of News Limited's predominant publications, The Australian. This is the first time The Australian had partnered with a community organisation and publicly acknowledged their alignment with a recognised charity. To date, The Australian has been working with Vision Australia to secure placement of filler advertisements and editorials, which have included full-page advertisements and several editorials. Recent filler ad coverage has been excellent, averaging around three placements per weekend paper. The editorial items are too many to mention, but would not have occurred had this partnership not been in place. So far, the relationship has provided Vision Australia with well in excess of $500,000 worth of advertisements and editorials. Congratulations, News Limited.
Kevin is presenting Jamie with the Vision Australia Award for a Corporate. It is identical to that which Marjorie has just received, with gold, purple, silver and black bands. Text and braille on the award say, "For service to Vision Australia." Over to you, Jamie.
Thank you, Kevin, and everyone here. On behalf of John Hardigan, the Executive Chairman of News and the Editor-in-Chief of The Australian, Chris Mitchell, I'm delighted to accept this award. The work that Vision Australia does across the country, across the various communities, you don't need for me to tell you just about how fantastic it is. It's tireless and often thankless, and we're delighted to do what we can to assist you and look forward to continuing the relationship and partnership in the future. Thank you very much.
Queensland Bureau Chief for the Australian newspaper, part of News Limited, Jamie Walker.
That brings our meeting to its close. Thanks very much to you all for being a part of our 2010 AGM, and a special thanks to Gerard, staff and volunteers for their usual excellent standard of work supporting this event. Thank you very much.
Vision Australia Chair Dr. Kevin Murfitt. That brings to a close our coverage of the proceedings of the 2010 Vision Australia AGM and associated presentations. It was held on Friday the 26th of November at the Vision Australia Coorparoo Centre in Brisbane. Copies of this audio will be available from the Vision Australia website. Just go to visionaustralia.org and you'll be able to find your way to it from there. Now, a reminder about Talking Vision. The best way to find out what's on the program, when you can hear it, and to catch up with recent editions is to go to the Talking Vision webpage. That's visionaustralia.org/talkingvision. visionaustralia.org/talkingvision. This Talking Vision special is a production of Vision Australia Radio. Thanks to all involved with putting it together. I'm Stephen Jolly. I'll talk to you again soon. See ya.